Welcome to the Issue Is podcast. I'm Alex Michelson. This week, a conversation with Congresswoman Katie Porter, who's one of the leading candidates for U.S. Senate in California, which is one of the most interesting races on the ballot this year. We recently announced that we will be hosting the very first debate in the race for U.S. Senate. Katie Porter is going to be on the stage along with Adam Schiff, Steve Garvey, and Congresswoman Barbara Lee. We have seen in recent polls that Porter and Garvey, the Republican, are pretty close in battling for second place with Adam Schiff ahead in first place. Remember, the top two candidates advance after March 5th. So it is important that Porter is able to knock out Garvey and is able to be there in the final round. A lot of high stakes for her on that debate stage on January 22nd. We talked to her about that. We talked to her about a new plan that she put out this week. We talked to her about what's happening in the Middle East, what's happening at the border, and a recent birthday. Here is our full extended conversation with the Congresswoman from Irvine, Katie Porter. Congresswoman Katie Porter joins us now from Washington. Congresswoman, welcome back to The Issue Is.
Thank you, Alex.
You launched your new plan, which is called Shake Up the Senate. Let's talk about some of the specific elements of it. You want to ban federal lobbyist contributions, ban corporate PAC donations, ban earmarks, and ban senators from trading stocks. How do you plan to pass that plan through the Senate when so many of the senators literally profit off of what you're proposing?
Well, that's exactly the problem, Alex. We have a Washington that doesn't focus on the challenges facing Californians. And that problem isn't going to get better unless we elect people who are willing to challenge the status quo, who can see the ways that big corporations and special interests are controlling the conversations in Washington. And that's keeping our Senate and our House from focusing on what the challenges are facing California. Problems like housing affordability, where we haven't seen Washington take a leadership role even as it's become Californians' biggest economic challenge.
Let's talk specifically about earmarks, which you want to ban. Basically, earmarks are specific projects that members of Congress request funding for on behalf of their constituents. Almost every Democrat supports earmarks, including your mentor and friend, Senator Elizabeth Warren. Senator Warren's website lists a long list of earmarks in Massachusetts that she's proud to support. Why is Senator Warren and so many others wrong when it comes to the issue of earmarks?
Well, let's remember that in 2011 and 2012, the last time Congress stopped doing earmarks, it was because of a series of corruption scandals. And at that time, President Obama himself said that he would not sign appropriations bills, spending bills that contained earmarks. So there is a long history of these pet projects of politicians inviting self-dealing, corruption, graft. I think the important thing is that Californians should elect someone like me who's going to be a warrior for California, who's going to fight to bring resources, good, high-paying jobs in clean energy and other industries back home to California. But we want to do that all across the state. We want to do that for all Californians, not just for a handful of people or a handful of communities.
But doesn't earmarks sort of give Californians their taxpayer dollars back in a way? We're spending so much money into the system that we get projects specific to us.
Actually, Republicans actually get more money than Democrats do. And so this has actually been a longstanding problem. California only has two senators. So when you think about a system in which 100 senators from 50 states all get the same amount of earmarks, I would actually say they're shortchanging California, as opposed to dealing with a system based on what our communities need. And there are a number of areas in which California's needs are actually much larger than the nation. There are probably others where our needs are lesser, but we should be safeguarding our tax dollars, spending them where they're needed, including in California, on the most important projects. Look, politicians aren't structural engineers. They don't know which bridge needs to be repaired to keep people safe. Politicians don't know necessarily what the long-term competing interests are, for example, with water and conservation. And so I think it's important to fight to make sure our taxpayer dollars are wisely spent, that California is getting every dollar it needs, including its fair share, but to do that in a way that does not invite the long history of corruption and self-dealing that earmarks have.
We are excited that you've agreed to be a part of the first TV debate of the Senate race. We want to show some info about that. We hope everybody will tune in on Monday, January 22nd from 6 to 7:30 p.m. on Fox 11 Los Angeles, KTVU in the Bay Area. I'm one of the moderators, the top four polling candidates, all confirmed to be on the stage at USC. So, Congresswoman Porter, what is your strategy for the debate?
Well, this is a race about California's future. This is a race about making sure that we change what Washington has been doing, which is catering to greedy corporations, and get it working for us, California families and workers. And so that's what I'm going to be focusing on, talking about my top priorities, including cleaning up corruption, making sure housing affordability challenges are met, and addressing the challenges of climate change. And so this is a chance for me to talk about what I've accomplished in my 5 years in Congress, what makes me different, for example, that I'm the only candidate in this race, only elected official in this race who's never taken corporate PAC money, who refuses lobbyist money. I went to Washington to try to unrig a set of rules that are shortchanging Californians, and that's the message I'm going to be driving home in the debate.
You know, since we've last talked, we've seen Republican baseball legend Steve Garvey emerge. He's been climbing in the polls. Our qualifying poll has the two of you essentially statistically tied, although he's technically in the lead with the margin of error of the poll. And I'm curious, what do you make of him, of Steve Garvey, the candidate? And do you think he's a real threat to get in the top two?
I haven't had the opportunity, and I think millions of Californians haven't had the opportunity to learn anything about Steve Garvey, the candidate. The debate will obviously be a chance for us all to do that. But I'm going to be focusing on my track record of what I've done, the issues that I fight for, and what sets me apart as a candidate, highlighting accomplishments like making sure that the administration delivered free COVID testing early on in the pandemic, standing up to Big Pharma's price gouging. So, you know, I think my job in the debate is really to present my accomplishments, to present my vision for California's future, what I, as a minivan driving mom of three school-age kids in California, what I see is what we need from Washington to be successful going forward as a state.
So to use a baseball metaphor, you didn't take the swing at Steve Garvey when you had the chance to do so there. That's interesting.
This should be a spirited debate. Yeah. This should be a spirited race. But I think it is. People are really tired of the partisan bickering. You mentioned earlier this week that it was a very partisan and kind of difficult week in Congress. And I think that, you know, taking sort of back and forth partisan bickering doesn't drive home to voters that the truth, which is that I understand what they really care about. They care about whether their kids are going to be able to afford college. They care about whether or not their children are going to be able to afford to live in California, whether we're going to attract good jobs, whether our communities are going to be resilient to wildfire and climate change. These are not issues that we should just be thinking about Democrats and Republicans. We ought to be talking about California's problems and the solutions that we can bring.
Another issue that a lot of people care about that we've seen a lot of protests in the streets over is what's happening in the Middle East right now. Another one of your competitors, Congresswoman Barbara Lee, has criticized you for not making your position clear enough. We want to put up a tweet that she sent out where she says, a conditional ceasefire is not a ceasefire at all. We need leaders who set the pace for change, not half-heartedly follow along when it's politically expedient. So just to be clear, what are you calling for? Are you calling for a permanent ceasefire from Israel in Gaza?
So a ceasefire is an agreement between the parties to a conflict to end it. That's it. That's the definition of a ceasefire. So it will require both Israel and Hamas deciding to end this conflict. And I think getting us there is going to require certain things happening. It's going to require things like freeing the hostages. It's going to require making sure that Hamas is no longer in leadership of Gaza. It's going to require a vision for a better future for the Palestinian people living in Gaza, both rebuilding from the damage from this heart-wrenching conflict, but also making ensure that they can have, hopefully a Democratic state of their own, a two-state solution, which is something I believed in. I released a fairly long statement laying out my vision for how I hope this conflict ends. I think we all should be supporting a ceasefire here, but it's not enough just to say a magic word. You have to be pushing for the conditions on the ground that bring the parties to the end of the conflict.
So you're essentially saying that you think that Congresswoman Lee has called for a ceasefire too soon.
Well, Congresswoman Lee did call for a ceasefire on the morning of October 8th at a public event that all the candidate, the Democratic candidates were at. At that time, Israel was reeling from the Hamas terrorist attacks on it. They were still actually making sure that there weren't in Israel. They were still finding, sadly, tragically, mutilated bodies. And so, I think that it is important to recognize that Israel, as every other nation, has a right to defend itself from terrorist attacks. And at the same time, Israel has the obligation, like every other nation in the country, to conduct war in accordance with the rules of war. And so I think that, you know, for me, I've been really proud of the way I've addressed this conflict. I'm proud that I have held meetings and had conversations with people who have all different kinds of strong feelings, family members, and opinions on this issue. And I think that should give Californians comfort that I am going to listen to them, that I am going to pay attention to what's happening, and that I'm not going to come at these issues from a place of just sort of reflexively saying what I think is the right thing in the moment. I'm going to do the learning and pay attention to what's happening on the ground in this terrible conflict.
Another issue is what's happening at the border. We saw 300,000 people crossing in December, which was a record. Are you satisfied with the way that the Biden administration is handling this? And if not, what specific changes would you like to see at the border?
Border communities are challenged by the large number of people who are seeking to enter the United States. And we have seen, in many cases, Republican governors fly migrants to other cities, including Sacramento and California, and spread kind of those challenges to other communities. I have supported investing in the tools within our immigration system and at our border that will let us have a fair, safe, and legal, orderly immigration system. So that's everything from stronger technology screening to help prevent adulterated goods, counterfeit goods, drugs from entering the border, to making sure we have enough immigration judges so that we can hear the cases of those who are seeking asylum and refuge in the United States. And so I think there's little doubt that the border is a challenge in the United States. Its borders are being challenged. Immigration, migration is up kind of worldwide because of so many conflicts. I think the hard part here is that Congress, year after year, decade after decade, for 20, 30 years now, has kicked the can down the road on immigration rather than doing the important work of addressing and building a fair and just immigration system.
Yeah, it's been almost 40 years since we had comprehensive immigration reform in Congress. Let's end with a couple fun things, because you know we like to have fun on this show. It is award season in one of California's signature industries, entertainment. I know you don't have much time probably to watch movies. Do you have a favorite movie of the year?
I don't think I have a favorite movie, but I did just watch Beef, the Netflix series, and thought it was terrific. And it's set in California.
Okay, very nice. The last time we talked, you told us you were gonna traverse the state in your minivan. We have seen that minivan up close. It is probably the most famous minivan in all of California. You recently had a landmark birthday. You turned 50. And that's something that you said publicly, so I'm not, like, breaking that news.
It's not a secret, yeah. Alex, I'm 50.
What does that milestone mean to you? And what have you learned in this past year about the state and yourself as you come up to that milestone?
Well, for me, it's been an incredible opportunity to hear from Californians across the state that while each of different community, different part of California, different region has its unique challenges, a common theme is that they do not understand why Washington isn't focused on the problems that matter to them. Why, when housing affordability has been such a hardship for California families decade after decade, does Congress not even have a housing committee working on this challenge? change. So I would say I think hearing and kind of across the state that the concerns that Californians have about getting Washington off its path now decade after decade of working on doing the bidding of big corporations and focused on delivering the good high-paying jobs and ability to make ends meet, afford a home, retire securely. I think those are things that really unite Californians. And so I think that kind of commonality among my conversations with Californians, I think, has given me a very clear vision for what I want to do as California's next senator.
And what does 50 mean to you?
50 is a celebration. It's a celebration of 50 amazing years of learning, of becoming a Californian, of starting my family. And so for me, it was a happy day. It was a celebratory day. It was a day that I got to spend with my kids. I guess that's about the only benefit of having your birthday on January 3 is that sometimes it's a holiday. But it was a nice day. I went out the day before and did some whale watching off the shores of my congressional district. So it was an amazing and happy birthday.
Very nice.
Our thanks to Katie Porter. Our thanks to you for listening. We have another podcast we put out this week with Peter Hamby of Puck News and Snapchat, breaking down what's happening not only in this U.S. Senate race, but also what's happening in the national political picture. We hope you will download that one as well. And we hope you'll be back with us next week. We are going to be talking with Congresswoman Barbara Lee, Eric Early, Republican Senate candidate, and also General David Petraeus. It's going to be a busy week and a busy show on The Issue Is, and we hope you will be here for it. Thanks for listening. I'm Alex Michelson. Like us, subscribe, reach us out in social media, all the good things. We'll see you next week.